Hi, she said. My name is Cheryl Taylor, and today I'm going to be talking with you about a project that the Department of Public Health in Boston, Massachusetts, conceived of prior to actually to Katrina, to figure out ways within the disparities framework to better reach African American populations, and emergency preparedness being one of those disparities that they were seeing. And I actually would like to thank the community partners that we worked with. We had the Center for Community Health Education Research that partnered with us. I have my partner here, Dr. Kaylon Taylor-Clark, at the Harvard School of Public Health. And this was a combination of efforts to put together this presentation and this project. We had two main project goals. One was to better understand how communities gain more insight on how to do a better job of outreaching our messaging and dissemination to African American communities. And our second goal was to provide insight addressing the communication barriers that those communities face, and trying to take the public health data and the public opinion data and think about how to give advice to 356 different local boards of health across Massachusetts about how to do this. Because it's a state project, but in Massachusetts, every single local board of health operates differently. So we needed to provide some frameworks and some guidance so those people could design messaging that was applicable in their own local communities. And we wanted to do something that moves beyond changing just ethnic-looking traditional public health messages and by just changing the casting. So we conducted three focus groups with African American residents to better understand how they were exposed to, how they processed, and how they utilized public health threats. And then we also applied health marketing or health communication principles to provide a framework for those local boards of health. And our research questions really wanted to look at what do communities know about the topic of public health threats? How do they weigh and how do they understand what things they do know about public health threats? Where do people go for information? And how does the state health department do a better job reaching African American communities on this and other topics? Now, looking around this audience, I don't feel like I need to spend a whole lot of time saying why do we need to communicate to African Americans differently about public health threats and emergency preparedness. But if you're thinking about it from the lens of the public health department, you're working with first responder communities, and a lot of times with the Homeland Security Act, you have ex-military people, ex-police officers, ex-cops who have, you know, guns and sticks and different things to communicate in the event of wartime and emergencies, and they're not used to thinking about how do we get people to do things voluntarily, which is what public health does. So I am in the room with, and the Center for Emergency Preparedness, in the room with people who don't understand the need to figure out how to do this well. So this is also helping make the case of the first responder communities. And like I said, to use these variables to move beyond just creating an ethnic-looking campaign to understanding what those values are that really are going to impact behavior change and utilization of those messages. And additionally, we know that the public opinion data demonstrates that there's differences in beliefs between African Americans and the general population. We also know that communication research suggests that those types of differences, those social determinants, impact our health communication and our behavioral outcomes. And we also know that these things could have a negative impact on African American communities. And so oftentimes what we do is design programs and things to reach just low-income African Americans or just to reach this particular patient group, or et cetera, and not really taking into account that, yes, there's an educational component or there may be an income component, but also thinking about notions of linked fate in the African American community. And that's one of the things that's helpful in messaging for African American communities, because you may design something that is targeted at a low education or low literacy, but because of how African American communities operate, that across class and across jobs and those types of things, there's a connection either emotionally for notions of linked fate or also physically, because we return to communities for products to get your hair done, to get foods to eat. So things that ordinarily you may not have to go back to a specific community location if you've moved on or moved out of that geographic area, African American communities tend to go back and revisit those areas. So very quickly, I just want to point out the structural influence model of communication inequity. And this was the model that we used to inform our focus group questioning. And again, it was just how do communities, or how are they exposed to information about public health threats? How do they process that information? What are their risk perceptions and understanding of health cognitions? And then how do they utilize that information? So this was initially our model for setting up our variables and demographics that we were going to look at, but we used a different model, which I'll discuss further in terms of providing insight and practical application for the messaging. I want to take a second to review the public opinion data that we used to look at the public opinion data and use the qualitative data to disentangle or to provide some insight into that information. So when compared to white Americans, African Americans typically have a lower awareness of public health threats. They have higher concern regarding different public health threats, and they have some concerns about their ability to respond due to lack of resources or exposure and income. They also tend to have different sources of information and different values in governmental response. And as you can see here from this survey that was done on pandemic flu, that if you look at the difference between blacks and whites, there is a difference in terms of knowledge of the term pandemic flu. And also, if you see that 70% of blacks versus compared to 54% of whites say that, you know, they're more concerned. So you have a situation where people know less about it, but they have a higher concern about the issue. If you look here at trusted information sources, you can see here from the list of trusted information sources, for all sources listed on this chart, African American community trust is lower. And as you can see from here, that only 50% or only two of the variables, the doctor and the fireman, is at 50% and above. So again, if you're looking at creating messages, looking at who's official trusted sources, you're going to have a different source with African Americans than you would have for whites. And in terms of values, if you look here, 42% of blacks and 30% of whites say treat everyone as equally as possible, and the 14 and 30 for protect the greatest number of people. So if you're trying to design a message that's going to resonate and be well received with African Americans, it may look different than if you're going to design that. So you're trying to balance those two messages. How are you going to protect the greatest number of people and treat people as equally as possible? This is actually an example of behavioral response, or what's your outcome or your utilization. And this was taken also from the pandemic flu survey. But if you see here that African Americans have concern about their ability to respond. Now, in this situation, this is a quarantine response, but they are concerned that they might lose their job if they were to follow quarantine orders, or they might not be able to get the health care they need, or they might simply have loss of pay. So even if people get the message and understand the message, they may not have the resources to respond to the message. So taking what we knew from public opinion data, we wanted to ask about those same things in the focus group data, and I'll share those results with you now. Very quickly, we had about 23 participants in our group. The majority of those participants were women. The majority of them were single and rented. We had two focus groups in Boston and one focus group in Springfield, and those were the areas in the state that had the highest concentration of American-born black African-Americans in the state. And the majority of the participants were low income, had less than $50,000, made less than $50,000 a year. First and foremost, this was mirrored in the public health data, not in the public opinion data, but that when we ask participants about what comes to mind, what's the first thing that you think about when it comes to mind about a public health threat, participants stated things like eviction and access to health care. Things like health care diseases, disasters, hurricanes, and flood did come up in the focus groups, but those things were secondary to those initial kind of immediate needs. When we asked participants what were the worst public health threats, things like drugs, violence, HIV and AIDS, and interesting lack of health insurance came up. But there was an understanding that a public health threat, whether it was a disease threat, whether it was a disaster threat, or whether there were these other public health threats like guns and violence, that it was a situation that was impacting everybody. I grouped the information seeking and information knowledge together. That's not necessarily how the structural influence model connects them, but in terms of messaging and how we think about it in public health, I wanted to discuss that here. Most participants never actively seeked any information on public health threats, but almost all the participants cited the internet as a resource, and that's not something that we often think about using with African-American communities, particularly in public health. And the participants that we spoke to, whether or not they had a computer was irrelevant. They could get to a computer. They cited places like the library or an army base or things like that. So they felt like they could get to the internet if they knew that they were supposed to go there. And then other specific channels that participants mentioned were the post office. There was recall of individual door hangers, things that were put on your doorknob when you got home from work, the library, radio stations, and specific ethnic newspapers. Obviously, we wanted to understand participants' risk perceptions or how they thought about their concern about public health threats. And as you can see here, participants reported a higher concern about things that fell into categories of neighborhood safety and access to health care and access to funds, again, differently than traditional public health emergency threats. I love the quote here, second quote here, that says, "I don't have much concern for those. In my daily life, I'm so concerned with access to health and violence, gun violence and drugs. I've lived through hurricanes and all that. That's a piece of cake compared to all this violence. So I don't even think about those disasters. When they come up, I likely just pray to God on those." I mean, and that's someone that actually was in Massachusetts that had left because of Katrina. So even having gone through the experience of having to leave her hometown, she still was saying that these other things were of higher concern to her. And lack of health care throughout the data was cited frequently. Now, interestingly, our findings were that African Americans have a lower threat or a lower risk perception of bioterrorism in their neighborhood. So there, again, very high concern about SARS, flu, pandemic flu. But if you ask African American communities about bioterrorism, they don't think they're coming to their neighborhoods. As you can see here from the quote, I don't think they're going to come. They're going to go to the white neighborhoods. We are not the target. So if you think about how we have traditionally done messaging from the public health department, we've been talking about bioterrorism. We might need to talk about another type of disease threat because we don't think they're talking to us. So because of that lower risk, you know, there. I mean, yes. Unless you work at City Hall. Yes.
Is your cohort group Caucasians or majority? How are you, when you say more or less, lower threat of, what type of comparison to?
Well, I'm comparing it to what we know about white Americans and African Americans from public opinion data in general. And so we're taking that national knowledge. And then when I'm saying lower threat, lower than their concern for disease or disaster threat. So, in general, we're saying what we know about public opinion data that's validated. But in this particular instance, even relative within our focus group qualitative data, it was lower than what their concern was about disease threats. Right. And everyone in the group was African American, and particularly we chose to make sure that they were American born, and they'd been in the United States. I think we had two people that had been in the United States about 14 years that may have been of Caribbean descent, but we were really interested in understanding about how the African-American experience impacted this. In terms of trusted sources of information, participants did state that they would go to the Department of Public Health, which was good. We had some name recognition there, and the mayor's office for information. but almost all agreed that they would not trust the police to give them information, but would trust firemen. And that, as you saw from the earlier public opinion data, was a trusted source. And from talking to participants, firemen don't have any police powers, but they show up on time and they can't arrest anybody. And so I think but one of the most interesting findings that we had here is that almost all the participants agreed that they would not trust the ministers in their community to give them information. Yes, and this was specific to flu. And it's not to say that we're not going to trust them at all, but it was in this particular case, the question was about flu response. And as you can see from this quote here, he's an expert with the Lord. I can't go to the minister on that. So there are other ways that we can talk about messaging, but I think it's very automatic that we assume that if we're going to reach African-American communities, that the trusted and credible spokesperson for that community, regardless of topic, is the ministers. We also asked them about official response, and we were just trying to understand whether people thought they would be treated or affected differently than others in case of a public health emergency. And you can see here, people really did think that they were going to be treated and affected differently. Examples of they're going to take care of their own first. And this was one particular person, but they have those evacuation signs. People knew about the evacuation signs, but I haven't seen any in our neighborhood, essentially. I thought it was interesting, though, that someone said, you know, despite that we believe that we'd be treated differently or affected differently because of our access to resources, our access to information, that if you're talking about emergency dispensing sites or if you're talking about where you're going to go to send people to get, medication, that if you offered a choice, that would make it seem a little more equitable. Asked them specifically about hospital and health department preparedness. And most people didn't know in their neighborhood, they didn't know whether or not they'd be prepared and don't know what their capacity of service is, though. So if you ask them, do you think they'd be prepared? I don't know. I hope so. I live close. But you also see here where people have examples with the healthcare system that they have long waits, et cetera, that influence how they process an information. If you say, go to this particular New England Medical Center, might be prepared, but not the one in my neighborhood. And we design our response to go to the local closest, most convenient place. We asked them about what their capacity was. We've heard discussion today about African-American communities not being able to respond. They don't have the resources. They don't have the money. But very clearly, they expressed concerns about their lack of knowledge and limited resources, but also expressed capacity and an interest and attending classes and getting more information about emergency preparedness and public health threats. And specifically here, a participant called out, how many African-American or Latino lifeguards or professional resources do we have in the community? We need to figure out how to get more involved in that regard. So, sort of in summary, their exposure, if you're thinking about traditional emergency preparedness issues, are not top of mind in African-American communities. In terms of processing or risk threats or cognitions, they've had experiences with differential treatment in healthcare and other public services. They're most concerned about natural disasters or disease threats, or more concerned than they are about bioterrorist threats. And they believe their communities will be affected differently in the event of a disease or disaster emergency. In terms of utilization or how people will respond, African Americans believe their communities lack resources and information about many threats. They may or may not have the adequate resources to prepare and respond to those threats appropriately, but they did offer suggestions, particularly ones about choice, that may be a way to at least start to combat those feelings. So, taking that data, both the quantitative and qualitative data, we wanted to develop some strategies for how would you create messaging and how would you give guidance to these local boards of health. And this is a little bit of a stretch in terms of how we're conceiving about health communications. But essentially, if you're talking about risk and crisis communications, the spokespersons are often government officials and mass media. You may or may not have resources to create specific and targeted messages. A lot of times you use the state powers to influence behavior. And a lot of times, whatever message or your product is not differentiated by ethnicity, by any kind of segmentation or marketing. In health communications, a lot of times the health department changes the pictures, the casting, the tone, the colors. They put some kente cloth on something and say, okay, you know, it's going to reach African American populations. We switch the board around the PowerPoint, right? We pick out a racially concordant spokesperson to deliver the same message. We may put it in an ethnic newspaper, radio station, same PSA, same words. You just, you know, we change the music in the background, right? But the message is essentially the same. It leverages race or ethnicity, but the message is the same. The reason we wanted local boards of health to think about a health marketing framework is that it employs similar strategies as health communication. And it says leverage the strength of the brand, but it leverages the fact that people know what the health department is and are familiar with it. So it is a trusted source, or at least it's a source that people recall. They may or may not trust it, but they know that that's where they're supposed to go. But health marketing develops new products to meet a particular audience. And I say that to using McDonald's as an example. Everybody knows they sell burgers. They're quick. They're at a location near you. They may not be quality, but they're convenient. They're priced well. But they got 9 different burgers at different price points with different flavors with different tastes. So to try to figure out how do you change, and this is the traditional marketing mix on the side, and I was just having lined up kind of what the traditional health communications message audience, you know, distribution channels, the thing that's different is one, price, what's it going to cost me, and two, what's your product? And so to a challenge local boards of health to, A, address the issue of price and say, you know, you have crayons and coloring books or creating a list of who your contacts are is not going to cost you any money. You don't have to go out and buy a $500 emergency preparedness kit to begin to respond. And the other piece is look at, can you create a different product, much like Michelle was talking about, that is new, that takes into account the different values and the different risk perceptions of this community. So in closing, the implications for practice are that messages should direct people to seek information prior to a crisis event. They should be connected to higher priority, and I mean you may want to start with disease as opposed to bioterrorism. To consider using the information as an information channel, although you may need to tie that to African-American sites that they're familiar with, and people did remember the direct marketing efforts that the health department has done. Messages about bioterrorism should include community-specific information. We're talking about you in Roxbury could be in trouble for a bioterrorism attack, and should convey that equity that we're trying to provide equal services to everybody. Selected trusts should be local and specific to the threat. You may be able to use a minister about diabetes, but you need to think about that when you're picking whoever your communication source is in terms of the type of threat for emergency preparedness. And that their past experiences with hospital and healthcare impacts how people process those messages today. And that messages and services address different resource levels, offer choice of location and services where possible, and again, I said ultimately thinking about creating different products that take resources and risk perceptions into account when you're designing those things. Thank you.